Hello, hello, and welcome to Art Pop Talk. I'm Bianca.
And I'm Gianna. Bianca, are you ready for an APT summer send-off of an episode?
Ugh, we are going to miss the Art Pop Tarts so much. But Gianna, I do have to say, I am ready to get summer started.
And literally, what better way to do so than ending the season of APT by talking about the season of the Coastal Grandmother?
Move over, hot girl summer. Coastal GMAs are moving in.
Let's Art Pop Talk.
Oh my gosh, Gianna, this is it. Before this little hiatus.
It'll be very nice.
Are you looking forward to the summer as much as I am?
I am. I suppose. I guess I just don't really feel like, to be honest, these days with kind of working like a 9-to-5 schedule, I literally don't have any PTO because I went to Greece. I'm just kind of feeling like this is the rest of my life. I'm just going to like go into work and I don't understand how people our age enjoy the summer anymore.
Yeah.
Like, I'm kind of honestly feeling like a little quarter-life crisis, maybe. I don't know.
I just feel like there's a lot of stuff happening. Memorial Day weekend, I'm going to the Poconos, and then a week and a half later, I'm going to see you.
I know, but I guess I'm also feeling like the reason I'm not going to the Poconos is because I don't have any PTO. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I'm like, fuck that. Like,
I'm sorry.
No, I mean, it just like is life. I'm just like
unlimited
being a brat.
PTO, folks. If you're an employer, unlimited PTO is the
trend. Okay, well, shut the fuck up.
I don't have unlimited PTO. I don't. I'm just saying.
You don't? It's wait, like, I thought you did.
No, I don't have unlimited. I do have a hefty amount of vacation days and sick time. I do get off for my birthday, which is...
Oh, that's cute.
So conveniently for me, my birthday is Friday the 1st, and then I have Monday the 4th off. So we're going to the Cape for an extended weekend.
You sound like such a coastal grandmother right now. I can't.
We're going to the Cape. No, I know. Literally, I'm so excited because when we were talking about what to do for my birthday / the 4th, we were like, should we go to the Cape? And for a long time, I didn't really know what that meant. Like, growing up, when people said the Cape, I was like, what is the Cape? And I also was telling this to my aunt and uncle over the weekend. So, obviously, we're, you know, the Cape includes Martha's Vineyard and Nantucket. And growing up, I mean,
I had no concept of what Martha's Vineyard was. I think everybody thought that Martha Stewart owned a vineyard.
That's what I thought. I was telling them. I was like, I literally thought it was Martha Stewart's summer home where she had a vineyard. And I truly didn't know that it was just an island called Martha's Vineyard. But no. We are going there.
But we are going there. And I hope
I see Martha Stewart.
I really hope you see Martha too. Like,
thank you.
Fingers crossed. You never
fingers
know.
Fingers crossed.
Like, how extraordinary would it be to see Martha Stewart in Martha's Vineyard?
I mean, does she
Vineyard?
Have a home there? She surely does.
Surely, right? She frequents. Isn't that where? Why did Martha Stewart get mad at Antony?
Oh, I don't know.
Did that have something to do? I thought it was like in Martha's Vineyard.
Like, or does Martha own another vineyard, and that's what she calls
in Martha's Vineyard? I don't know, dude. Is Martha Stewart a coastal grandma?
No, I don't think so.
Really?
Me, Martha Stewart has like a very different. Her energy is much too aggressive. Is not the right word, but much too strong. To be a coastal grandmother. For me, Martha Stewart is not a coastal grandmother. But this summer, I 1000% plan on maybe not being like full coastal grandmother, but I think this is my first time, quote unquote, going to the Cape. I'm gonna play into it a little bit, you know? I'm gonna like put on some white linens and I'm excited about it.
I'm gonna put on some white linens?
Yeah.
Well,
feeling good about it.
excited for you. I know I came hot and heavy with some aggressive Martha Stewart energy, but it's just cool. The FOMO, but that's exciting. Summer will be good. There's always things to do. Maybe I'll go to like the Tulsa Zoo or something. I am sad.
I was going to say, did you see that Lady Gaga added new dates and new geographies to her? Why did I use the word geography?
New geography.
It is far too early to be recording. To the tour.
No, I did not see that. Well, literally all her shows, like, in Texas, like, none of them were on a weekend, and I just, like, don't understand. Speaking of things I don't understand, I also don't understand why we keep talking about this. Well, actually, I do, because it is wildly fascinating. But in lieu of art news this week, we have some follow-up thoughts from the Art Pop Tarts, which we really love. It's always exciting when you guys really chime in and we get to share that. So literally, Bianca and I cannot let this conversation go on Kim's Met Gala look because we still find it wildly fascinating and find ourselves wildly fascinated. And the Art Pop Tarts have also just been engaging with us in this conversation as well. So to me, that tells us that that's a sign that you guys also aren't tired of this conversation. So again, in lieu of art news today, we are sharing some Art Pop Tarts thoughts on the subject. These thoughts mostly pinpoint on the materiality of the subject, which I think was just really essential when talking about historic items that have been used versus not used. And that really piggybacks off of what we talked about last week. And this is based on what the material nature of the object is and what the material object also needs in order to be lasting. Secondly, something we didn't talk about as much in last week's episode is the custom nature of the dress that originally was sewn directly onto Marilyn's body to fit her exactly. So there is hardly really any way that this custom dress of this nature, of this caliber, could fit anyone else exact. And it really shouldn't, because the intention was that it wouldn't be worn by anyone else. So to quote this Art Pop Tart, "I think the crux of it is that Marilyn's dress was only for Marilyn, and she only wore it once, and it's sensitive condition. Jewels are constantly passed down through the ages. By their nature, they're meant to endure. Gold is prized because it doesn't tarnish or wear. Those jewels have been worn by many, many people throughout the years, just like a wedding ring is passed down through the family. Now, if someone wore the Queen's state tiaras or coronation crown, that would be different. The jewels are less sensitive to environmental conditions of being worn. In fact, pearls need to be worn to keep their luster. And the owner of the jewels don't expect to be the only wearer of them. And those owners pass them on to the family, sell them at auction, give them as gifts, etc. Marilyn only ever wore the dress once, and it had to be sewn onto her. She never chose to wear it again. It was made just for her. Average vintage clothes, vintage couture, etc., doesn't have the same historical significance as a dress specifically made and specifically worn only by one person, or only worn once. Love this episode. Maybe misspirited debates in grad school." So Bianca, what are your thoughts? Again, I thought this was really interesting because we were talking about the material nature of objects so much, and it is really especially important to call out what that material calls for in order to be lasting.
Yeah, this also makes me, could you imagine having this discussion in grad school right now, talking about Kim's dress? Oh God, I would just live for it. This is super interesting, and I love this perspective, and I love what this Art Pop Tart is saying about jewels, how the nature of their materiality has traditionally lent them as objects to be passed down as tradition. And I think that is super cool. And I also did not know that pearls needed to be worn to keep their luster. That's just like a fascinating sidebar. I think this person is really just hitting the nail on the head too. I think this is a super strong argument for a thesis presentation of the matter. And for intent of the object is such an important aspect when we think about art history and who objects belong to and provenance and how they should be used. Intent, I think, is super important. And, you know, last week we had a big conversation about, like, as much as it sucks, it's not our choice in the matter because it's owned by a private collector who can do whatever they want with it, blah, blah, blah. But I love bringing this into the conversation as well. Like, the intent is that it was sewn onto her body. And, you know, after her passing, this is one of the relics that we have of her physical presence. Mm-hmm. And the fact that I don't want to say it's tarnished, but now inevitably the dress will be different because it was worn by Kim Kardashian. I think this is a really, really just strong point that this person is bringing to mind. It's like the dress, because it was sewn onto her, exists as a physical representation of Marilyn's place on this earth, not just in popular culture as a figure, but as a human body, and how important her body was in both positive and negative circumstances to the public and to us. And while I think it is wildly fascinating what Kim has done with this, you know, we talked about, could it have been done without wearing Marilyn's dress? Like, could the same thing have happened if she wore the replica the entire time? And I just, all of these thoughts coming together is just awesome. And totally agree.
Yeah.
Can't wait to have this like APT grad school culture quota class. Culture quota. Beatrice needs to lead us in a course on this discussion. Yeah, I would live for it.
It's so interesting because I feel like I'm not really like firmly in the middle of this conversation anymore. Like, I definitely understand like the gravity of like what was done to this artifact. You know, but it did take me a long time to wrap my brain around it because we don't experience something like that quite often. And it was a very momentous moment, right? And also, how would we feel if, you know, we feel the way that we do because it's also this specific dress and it's Marilyn's dress, but in what other cases are historic works of clothing okay to wear? So I literally don't have the answers to these questions, but it'll be interesting when they will probably come up again. But yeah, I mean, just a really fascinating and important moment. So we like just can't let it go, apparently.
I'm just going to think about it all summer, which is going to be great.
Just think about it all summer on the coast.
At the Cape. At the Cape. In my Marilyn replica dress.
Oh, I mean, Marilyn, like in Some Like It Hot, she's at the beach.
Oh, yeah. Or like, you know, in Gentlemen Prefer Blondes when they're on that ship, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I have laryngitis.
Oh, my God. Love her.
Okay. I mean, I could get on some like Marilyn beach vibes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, she does it good.
I mean, she's the pro at it.
All right, everyone, we are going to take a little break, and when we come back, we are going to share our thoughts on the coastal grandmother. Welcome back, everybody. In the words of Rachel Green, I'm so glad that you shared, and I'm so glad that you're done, i.e. the art pop darts on our third Met Gala conversation. Do you remember what context that quote was from in Friends?
Gianna, honestly, when I saw this in the doc, I was really trying hard. I feel like I am a pro at Friends trivia. And I was like, I was honestly scared for my, you know, health and well-being in terms of my friend's knowledge that I was like, where is this from?
So it's the episode when she's dating Bruce Willis and he won't stop crying.
And Paul, I love Paul.
I know. And freaking Bruce Willis, like, oh my God, really in our thoughts these days.
I know.
What a delightful human being. But I really, I love the Bruce Willis era of Friends. Like, it's iconic. Oh, same.
And Rachel has those unbelievable extensions.
Oh, my God. Oh, also talk about a little bit of Coastal Grandma vibes with Bruce Willis when they go to that cabin.
Yes. Yeah. And she does have, like, white low-rise pants on.
Yeah. Like,
those pants are kind of Coastal Grandmother vibes.
Yeah.
I, too, am a neat guy. Oh my God. I feel like I could watch the SNL Bruce Willis episode.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is it? It's a guy dance party.
It's a boy dance party. It's a boy dance party. With just us guys. So good.
Oh my God. If you have not watched the Bruce Willis SNL, please do so.
Good.
Also, I'm going to go on a tangent real quick, but did you watch the finale where, like, half a cast left?
I did not. I had, like, an extremely busy weekend. I had to work an event. I had, like, an art social this week. And, yeah, we were recording at, like, 8 in the morning on a Monday. So I did not watch. I did not stay up to watch SNL. But I did watch the highlights of, like, Pete Davidson on Weekend Update.
Yeah. What do you think Pete is doing next? Do you think he's moving to Calabasas?
You know, I couldn't tell you.
Is he going to leave Staten Island?
I think he should consider it at this point in his life. I think he talks about how much he hates it. So I think
summer thoughts.
Summer thoughts. Summer there. Summer here.
Okay. Moving on.
Moving on. So for today's Art Pop Talk.
It's a boy dance one.
We're going to want to put on our favorite Nancy Meyers movie because we are talking about the internet-deemed aesthetic of Coastal Grandmother. Coastal Grandmother has always really kind of been around, but not until recently have we been given a name for it. It has been coined and have been channeling this now trendy energy found in music, film, and fashion and into our everyday lives. So let's get into it. I first became aware of Coastal Grandmother, specifically on TikTok, and as an article states that I'll share with you guys here in a second, suggests that this platform specifically helped secure this style. So Hot Girl Summer is out, Coastal Grandma is in. This particular TikTok that I found was talking about a playlist where she put together this music aesthetic of Coastal Grandmother, which really piqued my interest. And now half of my freaking wedding playlist is specifically Coastal Grandma. Again, like, hot girl weddings are out, Coastal Grandmother weddings are definitely in. So the influencer who made this playlist is Lex Nicoletta, at least I believe that's her real name, but that's also her handle on TikTok. And her page is really dedicated to cultivating this lifestyle. Not only that, but she is also the person who coined the term Coastal Grandmother. And her TikToks really helped define this aesthetic and has garnered millions of views at this point. Homegirl's definitely gone viral. So some of the songs on this playlist that I have since stolen, whatever.
Gianna, your wedding playlist is fire, though. I listen to it all the time. It's like one of my favorite playlists.
I really like the playlist. I keep adding to it, though, but there's definitely some things that now I'm, like, over that I don't know. I'm ready to, like, take off of it. Because right now, it's a mix of Coastal Grandmother and,
early
2000s rap.
This is like the
which Martha may Stewart, be
Snoop Dogg.
Exactly. I was like, this may be that is Martha Stewart's like aesthetic. So maybe I need to just call the playlist. Right now it's Hot Wedding Jams, but yeah. Maybe it should be Martha Stewart Wedding Jams. Okay, so some of the songs on this playlist include This Will Be, An Everlasting Love, You Are the Best Thing, You Send Me, Do You Believe in Magic, there's Stevie Wonder, there's Hall & Oates, there's Aretha Franklin. So, like, are we setting a scene in our head? Is there a vibe? Bianca, what visuals are running through your mind right now with the mentioning of these songs?
Okay, I'm just laughing because You Send Me is the final song in The Holiday.
Oh, it is.
Okay, and so Juliana made this TikTok where she mimics the movements of that final scene where, like,
oh my God, Jude Law, I forgot like, about that.
So the visuals that I'm with thinking about with this glass, like, oh my God, if you guys could see us, we're going to link Juliana's TikTok for you so you can understand, or the final movements of The Holiday.
No. But honestly,
this playlist, all I can think about now after you said You Send Me is like the dance moves in the final scene of The Holiday.
And You Send Me is on the wedding playlist as well because I'm like obsessed with The Holiday. Like, I love that movie so much.
Such a good movie.
But that final scene is absolutely ridiculous.
And they're all like, have their hands on the shoulders.
Oh my God. And Cameron Diaz is wearing the most ridiculous cocktail dress.
I know.
And then, like,
the rest of her outfits in the movie
room.
Are so good. And then they put her in this weird, like, bubble cocktail dress.
Yeah, I don't know. Gosh. It's a weird one.
Cameron Diaz is the special guest on RuPaul's Drag Race All Stars.
Ooh.
The first two episodes just dropped. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so here for some Cameron Diaz in my life. Like,
fascinating.
To get her on my screen. Oh, mm-hmm. I'm pumped for it.
I know. Anyway. I love that. Yeah, End of the Holiday is definitely a vibe.
That's what I'm thinking about.
Is just Jude Law being like a creep.
But
honestly, Jude Law in that movie though is so cute. Everything except that moment.
Oh my God. Yeah, yeah. Do You Believe in Magic also reminds me of The Parent Trap. I mean, it's just so interesting the way that these songs are informing Nancy Meyer's movies. And, like, mm-hmm. I understand that's how the playlist was curated, but that's just immediately what my brain goes to. Do You Believe in Magic is when they're practicing the secret handshake.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, like, learning all about each other's lives in The mm-hmm. Parent Trap.
Iconic moments that stick with us.
Truly.
So, if you are thinking about some of these movies, or if you're thinking about some other ones, or if you need help painting a little picture in your head, I want to...
When you said paint, I know we say it all the time, but the episode of Friends where Rachel's like, let me paint you a little picture. That is Coastal Grandmother because she's trying to sell the boat to that guy.
Oh.
The wind through your heart. Got the wind.
I want the mystery.
You can make him call you Cappy. I'm sorry. I'm just associating that scene. Coastal Grandmother to a T. Wow. I'm honestly loving the direction this episode is taking this morning. This is exactly how we needed to start on Monday.
Oh my God. Continue. Amazing. Okay. Well, so if you're not thinking of the Mr. Beaumont, if you are still having trouble thinking of any other movies, Mr. Beaumont. There was an article that I found written by Olivia Marcus called The Coastal Grandmother Aesthetic Makes Me Want to Change My Entire Lifestyle. And she tells us that the Coastal Grandmother Aesthetic has been coined again, the ultimate vibe for the summer. In an unexpected turn of events, you're going to want to raid your grandmother's closet. So I don't know how unexpected I feel like this is, to be honest, because I do feel like it's kind of just a different trend in like thrifting almost. And in this article, she does talk about, she quotes like Malcolm Moore, like, I'm gonna steal like your granddad's clothes or whatever. I feel like this is just like an extension or the new extension kind of into thrifting. And also what we've been experiencing with like 90s and like early 2000s looks. The term coastal grandmother started, again, gaining that major traction on TikTok and has left viewers with much to contemplate. So what is coastal grandmother? Do you have a coastal grandmother? Is there a way to acquire a coastal grandmother? These are all questions that need to be answered. And finally, she asks, how do I become a coastal grandmother at the ripe age of 25? Which I really appreciated because I'm just like smack right there. Essentially, a coastal grandmother is an entire lifestyle inspired by the aesthetic portrayed in Nancy Meyers' movies. Perhaps you've always felt an affinity to Diane Keaton's character in Something's Gotta Give, or Natasha Richardson's portrayal of the glamorous mom in The Parent Trap. If so, you may be a coastal grandmother. Maybe you find yourself following in Ina Gardner's roast chicken recipe with a cable knit sweater tied around your shoulders. That's coastal grandmother material. And finally, if you've ever felt the desire to take a long solo walk on the beach in a button-down and a woven hat, there's no question that you're a coastal grandmother through and through. In the article, she talks about 10 things a coastal grandmother would do, which I think is really the foundation of like what we love about coastal grandma. It's this bougie and sometimes irrational character trait in a bad rom-com movie. So here are some of the things that she lists. Steal your lover's work button-down and wear it with worn jeans to dinner. Keep a pocket notebook to write poetic phrases when inspiration strikes. Pick fresh peonies from her garden and just tend to a garden in general. Take long walks on the beach solo or with a dog. And then I thought this one was also particularly important. Wear that capsule wardrobe. You can wear white, you can wear tan, you can sometimes wear blue, you can maybe throw in a pop of color, but ultimately like you're staying very beige. Invite your friends to tea, show up to every occasion in a straw hat. So, coming from the person who has deemed this aesthetic worthy, our creator, perhaps, Lex Nicoletta, says, quote, it's more about the way you live your life, slowing down and taking time to enjoy the little things like flipping through magazines and sipping tea on a Sunday morning or preparing a dinner with the day's farmer's market finds. The coastal grandmother lifestyle is attainable no matter who you are or where you live. You don't have to live by the coast or be a grandmother to be a coastal grandmother, she adds. You can take aspects of aspirational lifestyles and bring them into your everyday life. So with all of this kind of being said, Bianca, what visuals do you think encompass a coastal grandmother look and feel? Because I have a hot take on the stripe sweatshirt that people are saying is like coastal grandmother. I think that is too preppy with like the Sperry boat shoe combo. I think that's a little bit preppy and chuggy to be coastal grandmother.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that because there's something I want to talk to you about here in a minute. And so I will circle back to that statement. First of all, I just love this description. It's the bougie and sometimes irrational character trait. And that just harkens back to...
I also have to say that the sometimes bougie and irrational character trait was my quote. So I really appreciate that you enjoy that.
Oh, that was you. Wow.
Yeah, that was me.
Oh my God.
Because as I'm going to get into, there's something about rom-coms that there's not a market for it. There is. But there's so much debate or topic within film or movie, like history about how like rom-coms don't really exist in the ways that they used to because they don't cater to a modern audience.
I feel like this, the irrational behavior is like the meme of Elizabeth James getting ready to see Nick Parker after 11 years. Look at me watching. So with your question, like, what visuals do you think encompass a coastal grandmother look and feel? I think that might move into my discussion I have a little bit further down. So why don't you like walk us through what you think? Because I'll talk about in my intro to the art of it all about what I did originally kind of feel coastal grandmother aesthetic was.
Yeah, well, I think it's interesting when we think about, you know, why Nancy Myers or Nancy Myers' vibe is so closely related to this aesthetic, that a work of a filmmaker is being explicitly contributed to this coined term. And at the end of the day, I think it goes back to this bit of a 90s and early 2000s complex and a romantic comedy complex that Nancy Myers is really known for. And it's really easy to pinpoint her work and attribute it to this time period. Also, her main characters cover a wide range, too, in terms of, like, age or demographic. We actually have coastal grandmothers. Like, we have Diane Keaton, we have Meryl Streep, and then we have those beloved, now vintage, but iconic styles from Natasha Richardson or Kimberly Williams Paisley in Father of the Bride. But it's not like every single Nancy Myers movie takes place in the Hamptons either. So I would attribute it a lot to her contribution to romantic comedies, especially because that genre, again, has just been really interesting to discuss in a modern context, how we have movies now that have been created that make fun of romantic comedies. And again, it doesn't mean there's not a market for it, because clearly we're like gravitating to, and we're creating this aspirational aesthetic in homage to these films. But a lot of them are very cringy, and that kind of dialogue doesn't really cater to a modern audience, because sometimes those experiences are just, I don't know how relatable they were then. They're not so much relatable now, but we still like those movies for what they are, even though they might not be relatable.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's fair. And I think that's also, you know, in terms of just different trends of fashion, different comebacks, and this kind of crisis that we went through over the course of the pandemic, where we were all on TikTok and realized everyone had the same experience growing up, and no thought is completely original, but this kind of obsession that all of us had with Tie-Dye Girl from The Parent Trap or Chessie from The Parent Trap. Mm-hmm. And what I think is super interesting is that those feelings are all there, and it was so interesting to see everyone kind of unveil them and talk about how Chessie was her first crush and all this stuff. But the same thing could be said for the character of Elizabeth James as well. There's this obsession that we like continually have with Nick and Elizabeth and their relationship, and Dennis Quaid and Natasha Richardson. Like, there is something about all of those that we still were quintessential for us growing up, again, to your point, whether they were relatable or not, whether it was realistic, whether it was, you know, reflective of our societies, but they still live with us and are having that influential component on us to this day. So I think there's something to be said for, you know, an update of the romantic comedy in a sense to reflect diversity, to reflect equality and not be gross and sexist and icky. But at the same time, that doesn't mean I want to do away with the roots of a rom-com.
Yeah, I also think it's the fantasy behind a rom-com too. Like, there's something about Coastal Grandma that also puts us in a particular place or time period, mm-hmm. a location, like a spot, right? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of creating this fantasy environment that we can cultivate for ourselves and we can make an extension in our lives, but we're doing that perhaps in a way now that is more like safe and less like mentally like harmful than maybe some of those other romantic comedies that the dialogue and like the situational aspects of them just don't make sense.
Yeah, I actually think that's the perfect transition to what I'm going to talk about here. So going back to what I had originally thought I wanted to talk about whenever we started this episode, is I was kind of questioning what types of artwork echo the theme of Coastal Grandmother. And I was, you know, toying around with the idea of talking about Impressionism, which seems very fitting, very kind of fluid and beachy and light, particularly the works of Berta Morisot and her beach paintings. Something about a beach painting by her seems kind of quintessentially Coastal Grandmother, very tan, very beige. And when I started, you know, searching things like art found in Nancy Meyers movies or Coastal Grandmother art, it was so much more about the home itself and how place and space really make up this aesthetic. And it's a super kind of sensory experience and aesthetic how this trend is described in that texture, light, fabric, pattern, color, these kind of basic artistic terms inform something that has its very own complexities while being a very, on the surface, simple presentation. I want to read some quotes from some articles. According to Vogue, quote, "Credit for all this comforting energy is most definitely due to Meyer's knack for creating covetable living spaces. Even before she took her place in the director's chair instead of serving as a producer or writer, you could see the Meyers aesthetic slowly beginning to form. Take the home set of the 1991 adaptation of Father of the Bride and its sequel in 1995, Father of the Bride Part 2. A warm and welcoming living room furnished with plush seating, hearty textiles, a grand fireplace topped with an even grander mantle. A laid-back, understated dining area. A well-worn kitchen that brings the entire family together, all finished in woods, white accents, and plenty of gentle lighting. In fact, it is the kitchen that serves as the central meeting point in most of Meyer's films. Quote, there's a lot of action in the kitchen because a lot of scenes in my life take place in mine, which, like the movie, is a little too big, Meyers told Architectural Digest back in 2007. The article continues to read, quote, from the Meyers kitchens of Father of the Bride days past, a few key design hallmarks have become clear. Wooden cabinetry painted in neutral hues, exposed shelving, a window to let light and outdoor vistas in, a dining area, whether it's an island or a table, to act as an anchor point of key characters and their loved ones, all of which she had admittedly borrowed from her own real life. The Meyers kitchen instantly takes us back to a great and sometimes not so great, but definitely memorable times we've spent in our own, serving as a big source of comfort and nostalgia for the viewer. Then in a second article from Frederick, written by Mark Elwood, this is actually super interesting. It's a series that they do where they go behind the scenes with different filmmakers and set designers. And in this one, they went behind the scenes with Beth Rubino, the design mastermind behind the, quote, soft, dreamy, and exquisitely detailed interiors of the beloved Nancy Meyers films, including It's Complicated and Something's Gotta Give. Elwood writes, quote, mention a Nancy Meyers movie and its aesthetic is instantly conjured up. Other writers write to be the character moving through a space, but her characters live in the environment and spend extended periods of time in them. She's a visual storyteller, says Rubino. Meyers differs from many directors, Rubino stresses, in that she treats the built environment as if it were another character in the script. Indeed, often her movies unspool like plays in a consistent but small number of locations. Think the hour or so of Something's Gotta Give, where the story roams between just five rooms. Such attention to detail has been the hallmark of Meyers since her very first movie in the 1980s, Private Benjamin. Together, Meyers and Rubino have created crave-worthy worlds, and one that's distinctly all-American. Again, plush, neutral fabrics, the set designer notes pointedly, rather than prints and patterns that would more readily suggest a fussier approach to Europe or Britain. Theirs is a red wine-free world, truly. However rich, though, these rooms and homes are determinedly casual and very intentionally so. Quote, the appreciation of beauty in the world she creates never feels forced, so it doesn't wake you out of what you're watching. And I think that's a really interesting point, just in terms of, Gianna, what you were saying about kind of realism and accessibility and a lot of the problems that we kind of look at when we watch one of these rom-coms is that they are inaccessible while making you think it is accessible. It's very laid back, it's casual. However, those casual pleasures cost a lot of money. So the two of them, Rubino and Myers, their first project together was Something's Gotta Give in 2003. And although the exterior was on a home in Long Island, Rubino calls it a visual barometer for the movie. So the team had to create a Hamptons house from scratch, and locals in tiny enclaves are often kind of leering of renting to movie productions. So Rubino, quote, evoked the East End on a soundstage in Culver City, California, deploying some signature method touches. She says, "We had all the actors come through a few days before principal shooting started, and I had put a little bit of sand on the mats and sprayed suntan lotion throughout the house, so everyone was immediately transported. The house was so encompassing, and suddenly you had the familiar smells of being by the beach." So I thought that these two articles were really interesting in that they talked about place and space as a kind of home base, you know, no pun intended, for what a coastal grandmother aesthetic is. And I loved that it was really design-based, and I think that's kind of the principle of fashion and how we think about what kind of clothes and aesthetic and like encompassing features or additional features make up this coastal grandmother. Like you said, walking on the beach with a dog, or gold jewelry found at the thrift store that has been accumulated over time. Like, there's all these very interesting little design hints that all together make up this really cohesive and complex aesthetic. And this past weekend, I was in Connecticut, and I was kind of along the Long Island Sound on the beaches of Connecticut. And it was really interesting thinking about this upcoming episode, all these stores, circling now back to your point earlier about the difference between coastal grandmother and preppiness. And everyone, I think, is very familiar with beachfront stores that only exist at a beach town. And there's like J.C. McLaughlin or something like that, or Vineyard Vines you can find, you know, in city locations, like we have one here in Boston, but that has like a preppy beach connotation. So going into all these stores and looking at these beach towns, I was like, this is super interesting to think about the white coastal grandmother products that are found within the store, but the store itself is very preppy beach town store. But if this cute white linen with a blue hue stripe button down was just seen on Diane Keaton, it would be a coastal grandmother shirt. But when it was in the store, it was surrounded by all these other very kind of what you called preppy items. So it was really interesting thinking about that this past weekend too.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of different aesthetics that you can get into with any kind of environment, but even with the beach, you're gonna have like your conch shell necklace vibe, like you're gonna have your coastal grandmother vibe, you're gonna have like your tacky beach vibe as well. The commercialization of beaches with like commercial t-shirts and things like that, the tourism aspect of it. And I think that's what we can avoid, particularly in a movie where you're, you know, constructing this scene of like heavy isolation to the point where it doesn't really seem real. I feel as though they talk about it with Something's Gotta Give and how like the house is this pivotal point of the environment in which they inhibit, like it's to the point where it doesn't almost seem real, like this is the only place on earth that they kind of exist. And there are a lot of different movies that, you know, use these visual narratives to their benefit, but you know, and the house in Father of the Bride is so iconic too, and I think someone just owns that house and lives in it, but you like people go drive by it and look at it. The interior of that house and the exterior are like used very heavily. I don't know. I did like what you talked about with her use of like kitchen scenes too. I thought that was interesting, or the concept of like a dinner table. There's so much intimacy that happens within those rooms.
Yeah, and there were other points about the article. We'll link them obviously in our resources, but where they talked about, and I think it's Rubino who's talking about the set of It's Complicated, and Meryl Streep's character runs a bakery, right? And she talked about how she was very particular in the items that she brought into that kitchen space. So everything was kind of used pots and pans. They had kind of like old grease and food stuck on them. And like there were just things about the kitchen where the wood is worn on the countertop. Like it's that way for every movie. Every set designer has those particulars that you don't need to overthink when you're watching the movie, because it's just part of the environment. But broken down like that, it was super interesting to read about how this Nancy Meyers aesthetic calls itself to be worn. And I thought, mm-hmm. and I loved what she did with this set too, where she's talking about she sprinkled sand into the home.
Well, and it's just
like
a
we're
nice...
not going to see sand necessarily on camera, but again, cool everything
to set
put
the
together.
Scene. For those actors to create that experiential environment if you really
right.
want the characters to get into their role. And it's just a clever way to help set the mood, you know?
Well, Gianna, do you have any other Coastal Grandmother thoughts before we wrap up?
You know, I don't. Catch me at the Tulsa Zoo this summer, I guess. Maybe the Jinx Aquarium. I don't know. Like, that's what I have at my disposal these days. Why this bitch is at the Cape. So, it'll be a good summer, but right now I feel Sad Girl Central Station.
You just be the Coastal Grandmother of Tulsa.
Right. As our founder of Coastal Grandmother said, I don't have to be on the coast to be a coastal grandmother.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
So I am going to try to channel that energy and be calm and at peace as much as I can.
Well, Gianna, I am very excited to be seeing you soon. All of the art pop tarts. We are about to sign off here for the summer. However, do not forget that you can follow us on social media, as always, at Art Pop Talk, at Art Pop Talk across all your channels. Gianna and I will be updating you across those pages with our summer activities, Gianna being a coastal Gima at the Tulsa Zoo, for example, as well as any other interesting art news. We will try to keep you updated as much as possible. If you are feeling lonely and missing your Art Pop Talk, you can always go back and listen to our old episodes. Gianna and I will remind you of some thematic episodes on social media, as well as in our monthly newsletter. So do not forget to sign up for that at artpoptalk.com. We'll keep you updated through June and July. Always feel free to email us with any thoughts, comments, suggestions, DMs, whatever. You can email us at artpoptalk@gmail.com. We will be checking that constantly throughout the summer. We have a Buy Me a Coffee account, which you can find at the link in our social media bio. If you like this content and you want to hear more in August, whenever we come back, consider giving us a little donation to keep our podcast afloat. And if you want to rate us and review us on Apple Podcasts, please do so. Everyone, keep a lookout. Gianna and I have some really exciting things we want to work on over the summer. Keep in touch. We will return with an all-new episode on Tuesday, August 2nd. So mark that date in your calendars. And with that, everyone, we love you so much. Have an amazing and safe summer. Oh my gosh, I'm getting sad. And we will talk to you in August. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Art Pop Talk's executive producers are me, Bianca Martucci-Fink.
And me, Gianna Martucci-Fink.
Music and sounds are by Josh Turner, and photography is by Adrian Turner.
And our graphic designer is Sid Hammond.